You also like to use the town of Cleveland, Ohio, as an example of conventional wisdom. Tell us about their approach.
Well, I begin going local with Cleveland for a couple of reasons. One reason is that when I wrote the book a few years back, Cleveland was regarded as a great success story in economic development. And in fact, superficially, Cleveland, you know, has become one of these great, what they call global cities. They are, you know, they and Ohio are number one in business attraction, and they've built all these new, neat downtown icons like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But when you look at the underbelly, they are a totally hollow economy. I mean, half the kids in Cleveland live under the poverty line, and they're going nowhere. And this is true in economies across the country. The other thing that I pointed out about Cleveland is that many Clevelanders are great fans of football, and their Browns, that were run by a single owner, Art Modell, decided to move when their threat, you either give me a couple tens of millions of dollars to, you know, touch up the football stadium or else, the threat was not met, and indeed Art Modell took his Browns to Baltimore. And what I try to point out at the beginning of the book is that every single team in the National Football League, except for one, is owned by a single individual. And many of those individuals are practicing this kind of extortion with their communities. The one exception is the Green Bay Packers. The Green Bay Packers, back in the 1920s, was reorganized into it's sort of a for-profit, non-profit hybrid, and the shares are held predominantly by residents of Wisconsin. The result is there will never be Baltimore Packers. What Art Modell did could never and would never be done by the Green Bay Packers. And so the point that I'm trying to make there in the book is that, gee, if it's good enough for football, if we learn that, you know, we can really have a loyal team that is an ongoing wealth producer for the community of Green Bay because it is locally owned, why don't we apply that principle to, say, farms or factories or banks or offices?
Talking with Michael Schumann, director of the Green Policy Institute and author of several books, including Going Local, Creating Self-Reliant Communities in a Global Age. I'm Paul Nelson. A lot of follow-ups on that. To follow up on Cleveland, one of the byproducts of their success, if you look at it that way, is tremendous segregation.
Yes, and indeed, it is true in major metropolitan areas across the United States that you have these inner cities that are mostly people of color, surrounded by better-heeled suburbs, but the inner cities have sort of increasingly been the jurisdiction of the old-time cities, and then the suburbs set themselves up outside of municipal jurisdictions. And you've got the cities that no longer have the tax base that supports the needs of the inner city. And it really goes to underscore a couple of points. One thing is that when you segregate people away from where they work, so people live in one place and they work in another place, you get all kinds of terrible impacts on your economy. And it tends to follow racial and class patterns as well. The answer, I believe, it sort of underscores the relevance of local neighborhood-based development. I mean, many people say, okay, this really makes the case for regionalism. We have to create stronger regions where the suburbs redistribute their resources to the inner city.
Or perhaps where the government is regional, like they do in Indianapolis, where the county and city are one sort of government.
Right. But, you know, I mean, my feeling about regionalism, it's like what Gandhi said about Western civilization. It would be a very good idea. And indeed, if we had regions that had real power, it would be a very good idea, but we don't have that in place. So what we need instead is we need to give the poorest communities in this country, whether inner city or rural or Native America, we have to give them the tools to become self-reliant, vibrant economies on their own.
This is the opposite of what conventional wisdom is right now. In fact, perhaps not conventional wisdom, but some people are saying if it's so bad in inner cities like Cleveland and Detroit, it's time for people just to move out of them and for the city to pull the plug and stop delivering services to certain neighborhoods that are so that are ghettos, basically.
That's right. I mean, it's in a way, it's our form of ethnic cleansing. I mean, if we can just shut down dysfunctional ghetto communities and turn them into, you know, new forms of wilderness, then all will return back to normal. I mean, it's crazy, and it is, I believe, racist and terribly unfair to the poor people who live there. I am an optimist in the sense that I believe that every single place has the potential to become a vibrant, not only culture, but also economy.
Yeah. Let's get back to the Packers. One of the things in the Packers' favor is that the National Football League has revenue sharing, something that Major League Baseball, until this recent strike, didn't really have and doesn't have in the same sense that the NFL does. In a sense, the NFL is cooperative capitalism. So the Green Bay Packers have that going for them. They get a share of the national television contract where most of the money comes from.
That's right. Yeah, and indeed, I mean, it makes football an imperfect example of what one could do with community ownership. So one of the things that I try to point out to folks is that while Green Bay is a fascinating example, if you look around the United States, you probably can argue that at least half of our economy is locally owned. I mean, there are family-owned businesses that are about a third of the economy. 6.5% of the economy is nonprofit, colleges, hospitals, advocacy groups. You have 47,000 successful cooperatives, 6,300 municipally-owned enterprises, a lot of public-private partnerships. What all of these things have in common is that they're not going to move to Maquiladora or to Malaysia. They are committed to staying in the community in perpetuity. And what's interesting about local ownership is that it accomplishes three things that are important for community development. Number one, they are wealth generators for many generations. Number two, unlike a privately owned business with global ambitions, they're not going to punch a hole in your economy and destroy your tax base. And number three, and most significantly, you can raise labor and environmental standards, and locally owned business is likely to adapt rather than flee. And so it means that the only route to sustainability, the only route to social justice, is to try to get more and more of your companies to be locally owned and then adjust your laws accordingly.